the latest chapter in this long journey is the Uluru Statement. It offers a challenge to our country. The Uluru Statement says, and I quote, "We seek constitutional reforms to empower our people and take a rightful place in our own country."
The new Liberal Senator Andrew Bragg in federal parliament last week backed constitutional recognition and a voice to parliament.
It imagines a constitution where Indigenous Australians are guaranteed a say on laws made under the races and territories powers which affect them. This is a good idea. This is a fair idea.
But this issue has already created tension inside the Morrison government. Today on the show, we're going to hear from two Indigenous leaders about what they want from this process. And also we'll consider how we might get all Australians on board supporting the change. I'm joined by Richie Armat and Rachel Perkins, who were both in the visitors gallery in the Senate watching Andrew Bragg's speech. Richie is an Indigenous leader from Cape York, while Rachel is an acclaimed filmmaker and the managing director of Blackfella Films and also a director of the non-profit group Uphold and Recognise. So, Richie, Rachel, it's great to have you in the studio. Thanks for coming in.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, thank you for the invite.
Welcome to Canberra. Not freezing to death, I hope.
Well, for a Blackfella from Cape York, it's a bit cold.
But I was born here, so I'm used to this Canberra weather.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Exactly. Do you get, you know, do you get flashbacks to your childhood?
I do. I in fact came here with my family. Well, I was born here. My family came here in 1967 after the referendum that gave the Commonwealth power to legislate for Aboriginal people. And we came to Canberra because suddenly the Commonwealth had these powers. And so that, I blame the constitutional amendment in 67 for the fact that I was born here.
No, you poor thing. Anyway, you bear your scars well. Now, I want to talk, obviously, we're here today talking because recognition, constitutional recognition and the voice to parliament is back after a brief hiatus where it went away. It's come back. But it's unclear to me what's going to emerge at the end of this process. Is it clearer to you? Let's start with what you think should happen.
Well, in my mind, it's never been gone, you know, because we've been on this trajectory of constitutional recognition now for more than a decade, haven't we, Richie?
Yeah.
But we do feel exhilarated by the Morrison government and Ken Wyatt's leadership on this issue. And we're here today to support Andrew Bragg, who is making his maiden speech, and we believe will come out strongly to support the issue of constitutional recognition. So we have great hope.
I'm in the same boat as Rachel. I think with the Morrison government, with the Indigenous Affairs Minister, who's also a Blackfella, Minister Ken Wyatt. And I think we've got a really, really good show at constitutional recognition. I think by Barnaby coming out the other day saying, you know, he was wrong because...
Yeah, that was quite something, wasn't it, actually? Yeah,
because the statement from the heart, from Uluru, wasn't about a third chamber. It was about recognition of the First Nations. And when I say the First Nations, obviously Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders. But, you know, we're all Australians at the end of the day.
Yes. And let's sort of separate the two issues. I know it's sort of silly to separate them, but let's separate them for a minute. So there's recognition of the first Australians in the Constitution in a general sense,
yeah,
like just actually having the history somewhat proximate to reality. Then there's the separate issue of the voice to Parliament. So let's just call that the representative body. Now, so in the Uluru Statement from the heart, the recommendation was that the representative body, the voice, be enshrined in the Constitution. There's a lot of people in the coalition, notwithstanding Barnaby saying I was wrong about the third chamber, which of course he was, but there are people in the coalition who will resist having the representative body enshrined in the Constitution. Now, assuming you guys think it's a good idea, why is it important? Like, for people who are not following this debate at all, who have no concept of these issues, why is that important?
Well, the Constitution is Australia's founding document, and at the moment it doesn't recognise Indigenous people or the history of the heritage of Indigenous people for more than 65,000 years. It acknowledges our roots in England and its connection, our country's connection to the Crown. It acknowledges God, but it doesn't have any acknowledgement of this very deep history. So we think that making that document complete is it needs some recognition of Indigenous people. But we are very sure that we do not want that to be symbolic alone. Mm. In fact, we had, of course, the referendum in 1997 under Howard that proposed some words that would say, you know, Indigenous people were here for a very long time. But Indigenous people have rejected that because we have so many, you know, symbolic acknowledgements. We wanted something more tangible.
Yeah.
And tangible in a sense that it's useful, not only to Indigenous people, but also to government, so that we can have a say about laws that are made about us. And we know, I mean, if you are generally informed, you know that the Constitution allows for special laws to be made about Indigenous people. It's called the race power. And we have a number of special laws made about Indigenous people, native title legislation being one, and also heritage legislation being the other. And so what we're after is the opportunity to inform government of our advice when those laws are made about us. It's quite straightforward.
And it is, Rachel. Catherine, you know, it's like Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, we have to prove that we actually exist in this country. We really have to prove on a 24-hour basis, 7 days a week. You know we were here before anybody else. Why is this Mount Everest climb by the pundits, by the media saying, you know, well, they're after more than what any other Australian's getting? No, we're not. You know, that's completely so far from the truth. We're asking just for acknowledgement in our Constitution. At the present moment, there's a void, you know? And to me, it's like governments don't know what to do with the black fellas. Honestly, to me, that's what I feel. Because, they're going to take over. We're not going to take over. We just want to be recognized as the first Australians. We want to be recognized that when any decision is made about black fellas, health, education, home ownership, whatever, you know, the box and dices are, we want to be involved.
Mm.
We want to make the decisions to assist government. All right.
Yeah, exactly. So
to implement.
So there's two issues, Richie, right? There's being recognised,
yeah,
that just the history being recognised.
Exactly.
Then there's the issue of representation. So they're linked, but they're separate, right? Mm. So then there was a representative body, obviously, for Indigenous Australians. It was, yeah, called ATSIC. It was in Canberra for quite a long time, but it went away. So this sort of leads to the nub of whether or not the voice needs to be enshrined in the Constitution, or whether just having a legislative representative body is enough. I know there are Indigenous leaders already have expressed the view that having it just legislated leaves you open to the ATSIC problem, that it can be just abolished with a stroke of a pen. But then the sort of counter argument to that is referendums are very hard to win. You know, do we need to be more pragmatic than that? Do we need to look at this incrementally? That's something that you can start with some progress and build on that. I mean, look, you tell me, like, this conversation is about what you guys think should happen, what you want and what you think should happen. So does it have to be in the Constitution, Richie, or can it just be legislative? Can it just be this representative body? Can it just be formed by legislation?
Look, if it's just legislated on, it's like you say, you know, they can say, well, it's too hard with the blacks, let's get rid of them, mm, all right? The stroke of a pen. We have to be enshrined in the Constitution. You know, when the founding fathers actually drew up the conditions of our Constitution, they never ever mentioned us. And we didn't ask anything about it because we were still being shot by police forces in every state and territory. You know, my country, Cape York, there was massacre after massacre, you know. But are we still carrying that grudge? No. We've become so understanding and so responsible as Aboriginal Australians that we know you got to negotiate. You got to carry the grudges to any table. You've got to understand from both sides. And our job is to make this building here and all the parties understand that we've got to educate them that this is not taking away. Our rights have been taken away. This is taking away their rights as politicians in this building. When the statement from the heart came out, the Prime Minister, if he would have said, and that's Malcolm Turnbull, if he would have said, well, I'm the highest law in the land. I am the highest law in the land as the PM. If he would have said, well, I've read the statement from the heart. I am going to give it my best shot. Uh-huh. That's all he had to say. I am going to give it my best shot. And I tell you what, people who were half and half sitting on the fence, they would have jumped over. Because the Prime Minister is saying, and everybody listens to the PM. Mm. So, you know, I just couldn't believe he didn't take that opportunity up.
Yeah.
That's what I couldn't believe.
And so, but do you think that set it back? Do you think it's harder now, even if you could just wave a wand, you know, and just forget that episode ever happened and you could just have the conversation again? Is it too hard now? Because Turnbull and others came out and said this is a third chamber, erroneously, falsely, called it a third chamber. Is it too hard now because people have got this in their minds?
Well, Malcolm Turnbull is no longer our Prime Minister. We have Scott Morrison in the chair and we have the first Indigenous Minister for Aboriginal Affairs who has come out so strongly. You know, this is a new era in Parliament. We have a government that has a secure mandate. And we feel that Conservative government is the government to drive this forward.
It now approaching 5 p.m.
And as Andrew says, you know, in his speech.
I will now call Senator Bragg to make his first speech. Senator Bragg. Yeah.
Mr. President, I have a confession to make.
He makes this very good analysis, and I learnt this from my father, Charlie Perkins, because I grew up around politics, and he didn't ever side with either party. You know, he was out for the Indigenous people's agenda, and he worked with both sides of politics. And Andrew makes a very good point about the history of Conservative politics advancing the Indigenous cause.
The Liberal Party is used to opening the batting on difficult issues.
Here he says, that's why we made, talking about his party, the first moves to abolish White Australia policy.
We made the first move to abolish White Australia. We opened trade with Japan.
And delivered the Indigenous referendum of 1967, of course, under Holt.
We are the party of Senator Neville Bonner.
Who, we must remember, was the first Indigenous parliamentarian.
We Liberals are good at big changes because we can take the forgotten people or the quiet Australians on the journey.
So in a way, yes, you know, it's like we almost got cut off at the knees, but I feel people like Andrew, Julie and Lisa, Ken Wyatt, I feel like they're going to take this mantle on and we're here to support them do that. And I think the big question, and it's, you know, referendums, you asked why does it need to be enshrined in the Constitution, this voice? It's because we want the Australian people. You know, this document, the Constitution, is a document of the Australian people. And we want their endorsement of this. This is their document in many ways. And so this government has to clear a pathway for the Australian people to decide on this issue. And what we're asking really in many ways is, are the Australian people, are you ready to acknowledge the first Australians, your fellow Australians, Indigenous Australians, in our founding document? Are your hearts big enough to do that? And Indigenous people have put that offer clearly to the Australian people. The Uluru Statement from the Heart is addressed to the Australian people. That's why it is not in this House. And it won't be in this House, that statement, until the moment when we have recognition in the Constitution. So that's what we're here to do today, to support Andrew and to speak to the Australian people and say, will you back us?
And what do you think about Ken White? You've said it's, you know, obviously he is the first Indigenous Australian to hold this portfolio. I imagine there are huge expectations on him from colleagues, from community. Is that a good or a bad thing? I can't quite work it out from my vantage point. Is that a good or a bad thing, or is it a bit of both?
I think the Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Mr. White, I think he's a very, very proud Indigenous person. And I think he's a strong Indigenous person. You know, to come out at the press club only a couple of weeks ago with the speech he gave every single black fella, and I think 50% of the white fellas, something to look forward to aim for in our constitution. I think when, and I'm going off the subject here, but when the same-sex marriage bill came out, yeah, right, and they called for a referendum, I don't know about any other Australian, but I knew in my heart that two men or two women don't affect my life. They don't interrupt my life. Good on them, long as they're happy in this country. And I think if we ran the referendum on that day, we would have had 65 to 68% over the line. Because the same question was asked to a lot of the pundits about, well, what do you think about the Indigenous voice in the Constitution?
Mm.
And they gave the same answer, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just don't know why somehow this is like Moses parting the Red Sea. That's what it seems like.
Well, I don't know either, guys, but yeah, but here we are.
You know, it's,
things take time. Constitution's there. Tricky documents.
It's not rocket science. It really isn't. Just
no, well, that's right. When you look at other countries, who
people have to make decisions in positions. They have to make.
But do you think Ken's the bloke to make decisions?
Absolutely.
And drive it through?
Absolutely. But he needs the party room's support.
Yeah.
And I think he's got Julian, he's got Andrew. I think maybe to a certain extent, and I'm putting Barnaby on a pedestal here, I think Barnaby might be having a rethink about this.
I think what he said is significant.
Yeah.
I think you're being a bit generous by saying he's having a rethink. But it was, I mean, the mea culpa was significant. He's not a bloke who says, you know, I'm an idiot every day of the week. So,
I think ScoMo, as the PM, he's a decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
Look what he did with the election. And I think deep down, the Prime Minister would be saying, Jesus, if I can't do this in this term, all right, of office, well, I don't think I'll ever get another chance again.
Yeah.
That's what I believe.
Okay. Given you've raised Scott Morrison, let's think about him for a minute. Obviously, Ken Wyatt's been given, you know, has been authorised by the Prime Minister, obviously, to conduct this conversation. So the Prime Minister's on board. I'm not trying to suggest that he's not on board. He's on board. Otherwise, Ken Wyatt wouldn't have said anything.
Yes.
But, do you think, though, that the Prime Minister will need to play quite a prominent role in making these arguments, or should it be left predominantly to Ken Wyatt in order to carry it? It's not a trick question. I'm just genuinely interested.
Yeah.
What do you think is the best approach? Do you think the Prime Minister needs to be out there obviously supporting this cause, or could that be counterproductive?
I don't think that the Prime Minister supporting it would be counterproductive because
I'm struggling to understand how.
Strong mandate.
Sure, but
yeah, no, I don't think. I think that would be a wonderful asset to us. I mean, he has the support of the majority of the Australian people, and let's remember that this is not an Indigenous problem in some ways. It's an Australian problem. It's an Australian problem that we haven't come to terms with recognising Indigenous people. This constitution was not drafted by Indigenous people. It was drafted by, you know, a bunch of senior non-Indigenous people.
Blokes with beards.
Blokes with beards, yes. Well, yes. And
nothing against beards, by the way, but yeah, blokes
and,
with beards. Yeah.
So really, I think this is, you know, it's not up to the Aboriginal people to do this alone, is my point. This is a problem for Australia to resolve. We look at other countries like Canada, Aotearoa, New Zealand. They've resolved these issues, or, you know, much to a much greater degree than we have. So this is an issue for our country to come to terms with our history, come to terms with how we're going to live with each other into the future, and how Indigenous people are going to be served by government, and how we can assist government in ameliorating or changing the position of Indigenous people. I mean, this goes to a very deep question. How do we, Indigenous people, partner with government to solve this crisis that we have in our communities? Often, you know, people like us are accused of being elites. We're accused of not caring about what's happening on the ground with Indigenous people. That's just not true, because we see our advice to government, a partnership with government, as a way of solving our problems. So I suppose my point is it's a document that we all have to come to make work for our country. And so if Scott Morrison led on this, I think it'd be great. But we have to give it time. You know, there's a co-design process. Everyone's jumping to conclusions about what this is going to be.
Yep.
We haven't sat down and designed it yet. So I would ask, you know, for people to just take a breath, allow Indigenous people and government the time to look at this process, to co-design something together that can work, and just reserve your judgment until the model is suggested. And that's what really we're asking for.
Mm-hmm. And what about, we've obviously talked about the coalition a bit, how important it is to have people like Andrew Bragg and Julian Laser and others building the case. And it's important for the Prime Minister to be out there, and it's important for Ken to be given time and space in order to develop a model, right? That's all clear. What about Labor now? Because I think it's been pretty obvious over the last couple of weeks that Pat Dodson's patience is pretty much at the end of the line. I think he's been quite forceful, really, over the last couple of weeks about where this is up to. It can't really happen if it's not bipartisan, can it? I mean, again, is there some special magic that I'm missing here that, like, Labor and the government have really got to be on the same page? Do you think they are? And do you think that they can maintain being on the same page through this process?
Catherine, before the election, I think short and committed to a referendum.
Yes.
All right? And I think the whole party room from the Labor side understood and they committed. We have three Indigenous senators in the Labor Party, and I think each of them would want something for their own people.
Mm.
I think Albo's committed to the same process. I really do, because they took the lead role during the election, all right, on this issue. I think our strategy, all right, is really to get the Conservatives on side.
Yes.
And I think I have a feeling deep down in my gut that at least half of the Conservatives are on side. But I think the other half just needs to be educated
mm-hmm.
on what this is all about.
Do you think they can be educated?
Yes, of course they can.
No, I'm not being gratuitous. Do you think they can, or do you think they want to be more to the point?
Well, I think there's a lot of people feeding misinformation. That is our problem. Now, we've got certain think tanks that are pushing just lie, straight out lie and misinformation that this is the third chamber of parliament. You know, and that is a common suggestion. I read a lot of press and I read a lot of comments. And people are saying things like Aboriginal people get an extra vote. You know, none of these proposals are even, you know, being considered. So I think, yes, there's a big educational process required, like there was with equal marriage. You know, they made a very good campaign, local community campaign about what was being proposed. And I think we need the same thing. And look, there will be a portion that think that Indigenous people and our history is irrelevant to the modern nation of Australia, and that's their choice. But I think most Australians have an appreciation that this country is very new and it has a depth that hasn't been, you know, dealt with and hasn't come to terms with in our foundational document. I think that's just logical. And I think Australians are pretty, you know, they can work things like that out. So I have great hope in the Australian people. And I might be naive, but I think you have to be glass half full. Someone said there's no room for cynicism in Indigenous affairs. You know, we have to have hope and move forward, and that's why we're here today.
No, I don't think there's any room for cynicism in politics either. Like, even though there's a lot of there's a lot of reasons to default to cynicism, it's like if you get cynical, you're useless. You're
yes,
not,
you might as well just leave.
Exactly.
You
know, exactly.
We're here to do good things, aren't
exactly.
we? You know, we're here to make the country better.
But you really genuinely, the both of you, you really genuinely think that Conservatives who say things like this will divide the country on the basis of race, this will create a sort of South African situation in reverse.
Terrible things.
But it is ludicrous. And people in this line of work in politics, they're not generally.
Can I just
stupid.
Interrupt you there?
Yes, please do.
When Native Title came out, there was a huge campaign, particularly from the Western Australian government and mining interests, who've now done a complete 360. That said people's backyards would be taken, that the whole country was going to go down the gurgler, that it was going to destroy the nation, split us in two. And actually Native Titles enriched our country in many ways. It's brought Indigenous people and mining companies much closer. It's been economically great for the country. So, you know, it's we will have many scare campaigns, and we just have to take a very considered, careful, respectful view when we're tackling such an important issue as this. And I think we have to keep open minds and listen to the facts.
As anybody who says this is going to divide the country, have they given a genuine reason on how it will divide the country? No. You know, words are cheap. Everybody who goes on leave, Australians, black, white, blue or brindle, when you go on leave, everybody says when they come back home to Australia, this is the greatest country in the world, right? If we united black and white, Asians, whoever, if we united and we achieved what Indigenous people want to be achieved in this country, we would not only be a good country, we would be the greatest country. And honestly, it's not going to take anybody's rights away. This fear-mongering and this scare campaign just doesn't cut it anymore. Because Australian people, I think, really understand we have to do this, all right? We can't just have it sitting on the shelf and bring it on the table every now and then. We got to do this, and I think now is the time to do this. And I sincerely believe that the Conservatives, I believe, will drive this. I do.
Oh, I hope you're right. It's a good note to end on in any case. Thanks very much, both of you, for making the time for this conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. The episode this week was produced by Ellen Leibeater and by Miles Martignoni. You know the drill. Subscribe, share, rate, review, tell your friends, all of that stuff. We'll be back with another episode real soon.